Ever get the feeling like you're operating on a totally different wavelength than like everyone else?
Oh, totally.
It's like we're all playing the same game of life, but some folks just got like a different set of rules or something.
Right, or different goals, like you're trying
Yeah,
to
somebody
get
else.
to a different destination.
Totally. Well, today's deep dive is all about kind of cracking that code of human personality, specifically through the Enneagram. Have you heard of
Oh,
this?
yes. I love the
Okay,
Enneagram.
so this isn't about, slapping labels on people, right?
Yeah.
It's about understanding,
Understanding.
yes, the why behind the what.
Exactly.
So, like, why do some people crave structure while others like chase novelty? What makes someone like fiercely independent and someone else a total peacemaker?
Yeah, those are the questions.
These are the big questions.
But the Enneagram.
The Enneagram can help us answer.
Yes,
It's
exactly.
like having X-ray vision for motivations, right?
Yes.
We've got nine distinct personality types to explore, each with their own kind of unique set of strengths, weaknesses, fears, desires, the whole shebang.
Yes. And before we even dive into those types, I think it's important to understand the Enneagram's visual structure.
Okay.
So picture a circle
Okay.
with 9 points,
All right.
each point representing a type, and these points are connected, showing how the types relate and influence one another.
I'm picturing like this personality map. So how
Yes.
do we even navigate this thing?
So by understanding the three centers of intelligence, so we have the gut, the heart, and the head.
Okay, break it down for me. What's the deal with these centers?
Okay, so think of the gut center as our instinctual center.
Okay.
It's all about reacting quickly based on gut feelings. When threatened, this center's default response is anger.
Okay.
Then we have the heart center,
Right.
which prioritizes feelings and connecting with others.
Okay.
Its core emotion is shame.
Got it.
And finally, the head center is the thinking center,
Yeah.
focused on analyzing and understanding the world. Its primary driver is fear.
So give me like a real world example of this. How would these centers play out?
Let's say someone spills coffee
Okay.
all over your brand new white shirt.
Oh no.
A gut-centered type might blow up.
Right.
A heart-centered type might worry about how you feel.
Yeah.
And a head-centered type might start analyzing the physics of the spill.
Okay.
Like, how did this even happen?
That's perfect.
Yeah.
So it's like the same situation,
Yeah.
but completely different
Yeah.
reactions.
Reactions based on those centers.
Okay, I'm starting to see the light now. Are we ready to meet the nine types that live on this map?
Yes, absolutely. Let's start with type one, the perfectionist.
Woo.
Driven by a deep sense of right and wrong,
Okay.
these folks have a strong inner critic and constantly strive to improve themselves and the world around them.
Okay.
You know?
That sounds like my friend who color codes her spice rack.
It very well could be.
Yeah.
Type ones have this intense desire for goodness and
Oh,
integrity.
boy.
But here's the interesting part.
Okay, what's that?
That desire often stems from a fear of being flawed or corrupt. They
Oh.
worry that even the smallest mistake could make them inherently bad.
So it's not just about being organized. It's
Right.
like a deeper
Yes, it's deep.
cheer driving that behavior.
Exactly. And this fear can lead them to be highly critical of themselves and others.
Oh, yeah.
And their black and white thinking can make it tough to see the nuances in situations.
I'm already thinking about how I approach feedback at work. I definitely overanalyze
Yeah.
and worry about getting things exactly right.
Perhaps you have some type one tendencies yourself.
Maybe.
Now let's move on to type two, the helper.
Totally.
These are the warm, caring individuals who find fulfillment in connecting with others and making them feel loved.
Yeah.
They're the ones who always go the extra mile to offer support and a listening ear.
The friends who always bring the extra casserole dish to the potluck.
Precisely. Type twos are incredibly empathetic and driven by a desire to feel loved and appreciated.
Like.
But this desire often masks a deeper fear
Ooh, what is it?
of being unworthy of love.
So they try to earn love through their actions.
Exactly. And that can lead them to neglect their own needs
Oh.
while focusing too much on others.
Right.
They might find themselves feeling resentful if their efforts aren't appreciated.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
It's like they're pouring from an empty cup.
Which is why it's so important for type twos to learn healthy boundaries.
Yeah.
They need to prioritize their own well-being to avoid burnout and maintain healthy relationships.
Okay, type two, take note.
Yes.
Up next, we have type three, the achiever.
Ooh, yes.
These are the ambitious-driven folks who excel in fast-paced environments and love to check things off their to-do lists.
Yes, you'll often find type 3s at the top of their game, whether it's in their careers, personal lives, or social circles.
Okay.
They're incredibly adaptable and charismatic, always striving to be the best version of themselves.
So like that coworker who always has the perfect Instagram feed.
Yeah.
Showcasing all their latest achievements.
That's a classic type 3.
Okay.
But behind that polished exterior lies a fear of being worthless or insignificant.
Oh, wow.
They often tie their self-worth to their achievements, constantly seeking external validation.
So it's not just about ambition. It's about a need to prove their value.
Exactly. And this fear can lead them to become overly focused on appearances, struggling to connect with their true selves.
Right. So they might look really successful, but are they actually happy?
Learning to value their intrinsic worth separate from their accomplishments is a key challenge for type 3s.
It's like they're wearing a mask of success, afraid to let anyone see the real person underneath.
Which brings us to type 4, the individualist.
Okay.
These are the deep feelers, the creative souls who are constantly searching for meaning and authenticity in their lives.
I'm picturing like artists, writers,
musicians.
People who express themselves in these unique and profound ways.
Your spot-on type 4s are drawn to anything that helps them connect with their emotions and express their individuality.
Yep.
They have a rich inner world and a deep understanding of their own feelings.
Mm-hmm.
However, their fear of having no identity or personal significance can lead them down a path of comparison and envy.
So they might look at others and feel like they're falling short.
Exactly. They can get caught in a cycle of longing for something they feel is missing.
Right.
Which can lead to feelings of melancholy and isolation.
It's like they're searching for a mirror to reflect their true selves, but they keep getting distracted by the reflections of others.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
Yeah.
The key for type 4s is to embrace their own uniqueness without needing external validation.
Easier said than done.
Yes. But their individuality is their strength.
Okay, on to type 5, the investigator.
Yes.
These are the knowledge seekers, the ones who are constantly absorbing information and trying to understand the world around them.
Yes, they're often described as quiet and insightful. Type 5s are incredibly perceptive and independent thinkers.
Hmm.
They have a deep need to feel capable and competent, especially in the face of the unknown.
Oh.
This drive for knowledge stems from a fear of being helpless or incapable.
So they build up their knowledge base as a way to feel safe and in control.
Precisely.
Makes sense.
They might withdraw from the world and isolate themselves in their pursuit of knowledge,
oh,
neglecting their emotional needs and relationships in the process.
It sounds like they're building a fortress of information around themselves.
Yeah.
Just like finding comfort in this world of ideas.
And while that world can be a source of great comfort, it's important for type 5s to learn to connect with others and share their insights.
Right.
Their knowledge can be a powerful gift to the world, but only if they're willing to let others in.
So it's about balancing their need for solitude.
Yes.
With the richness of human connection.
Exactly.
Okay, what about type 6, the loyalist? What makes them tick?
Type 6s are the anchors of the Enneagram. They crave security, trust, and commitment above all else.
Okay.
They're fiercely loyal to those they love and are always prepared for the worst case scenario.
Those are the friends who always have a first aid kit.
Yes.
And an emergency plan no matter where they go.
That's a classic type 6.
Right.
They're the reliable, dependable ones you want on your team in a crisis.
For sure.
But this need for security often stems from a deep fear of being without support or guidance.
So they're like constantly scanning for danger, trying to anticipate those potential threats.
Exactly. And this hypervigilance can lead to anxiety, overthinking, and a tendency to doubt themselves and others.
Oh, wow.
They can get stuck in a loop of what ifs, struggling to relax and trust the world.
It's like they're always on guard, even when there's no real danger present.
Which is why learning to trust themselves and their own intuition is so important for type 6s.
Okay.
They need to find that inner sense of security to overcome their anxieties and fully embrace life's uncertainties.
All right, type 6, you got this.
Yes, trust yourself. Yeah, it's like they're carrying this invisible backpack.
Yeah.
Filled with anxieties, just always prepared for the worst.
Right, always like one step ahead.
But imagine the freedom if they could just lighten that load.
Totally. It's amazing how these like underlying fears can drive our behavior.
It is fascinating.
Makes you realize those like annoying quirks we all have.
Yeah.
Are actually like defense mechanisms.
Absolutely. That's what's so fascinating about the Enneagram. It's not about judging. It's about understanding.
Totally. All right. I'm ready to read some more types. Who's next on our personality parade?
Let's talk about type 7, the enthusiast.
Okay.
These are the vibrant, adventurous souls who bring a contagious energy to everything they do.
Okay.
They're constantly seeking new experiences, always up for a good time.
You know those people who light up a room the moment they walk in?
Yes.
I bet they got some strong Type 7 energy.
You're probably right. Type 7s are incredibly optimistic and spontaneous.
Okay.
They see the world as a playground filled with endless possibilities.
I love that.
But their fear of being trapped or limited, especially by negative emotions, can lead them to flit from one thing to the next.
So while their enthusiasm is infectious, they might struggle with commitment.
Yes, or facing difficult feelings head on.
Right, like they're always looking for the next distraction.
Exactly. It's like they're trying to outrun boredom and pain, constantly seeking that next hit of excitement.
Makes me think of those friends who are always planning the next big trip or adventure.
Yes.
But they never seem to unpack their suitcases from the last one.
That's a perfect example. The key for Type 7s is to learn to be present with themselves.
Okay.
And embrace the full spectrum of human experience, even the uncomfortable parts.
Yeah.
True joy comes from finding balance, not just chasing fleeting moments of excitement.
That's deep. Okay. Tell me about Type 8. The challenge, they sound intense.
They definitely have a powerful presence. Type 8s are the strong, decisive types who aren't afraid to speak their minds and challenge the status quo.
Okay.
They value honesty, justice, and protecting the vulnerable.
I'm picturing a fearless leader, someone who commands attention and isn't afraid to stand up for what they believe in.
That's a great way to visualize a Type 8. They have this natural assertiveness and self-confidence that draws people to them.
Okay.
But their fear of being harmed or controlled can lead them to be overly domineering or confrontational.
Oh, so it's like a protection mechanism.
Precisely. It's like they're wearing armor, always ready for a fight, even when one isn't necessary.
Yeah, makes sense.
The key for Type 8s is to learn to balance their strength with vulnerability.
Okay.
Allowing themselves to soften and build deeper, more trusting relationships.
So it's like learning to put down the sword and extend a hand.
Exactly.
What about Type 9, the peacemaker? What's their superpower?
Type 9s are the masters of harmony.
Ooh.
They have this incredible ability to see all sides of a situation and bring people together.
Okay.
They're the glue that holds relationships and communities together.
Like that friend who can always diffuse a tense situation.
Yes.
Find the common ground no matter how heated things get.
That's a classic Type 9. They're driven by a deep desire for peace and tranquility, both within themselves and in their external world.
Okay.
But this desire often stems from a fear of loss and separation.
So they avoid conflict at all costs just to maintain that harmony.
Exactly. And while their peacemaking abilities are a gift, constantly suppressing their own needs and going along with things they don't agree with can lead to resentment.
Right.
And a sense of losing their own voice.
It's like they're so busy smoothing over everyone else's rough edges that they forget to tend to their own.
Which is why it's important for Type 9s to learn to assert themselves and embrace healthy conflict.
Okay.
True peace comes from authentic connection, not just avoiding disagreements.
That's good advice for everyone. Actually, okay, so we've met all 9 types.
We have.
That was a whirlwind tour of the personality landscape.
It was.
It's incredible how each type brings such a unique...
I know, it's fascinating.
...set of strengths and challenges.
It really highlights the beauty of human diversity, doesn't it?
It does.
We're all wired differently, and that's what makes life so interesting.
Totally. I'm starting to see people in a whole new light.
Good.
But I do have a question about something you mentioned earlier. Wings. How do those fit into the picture?
Great question. Wings refer to the influence of the types on either side of your core type.
Okay.
Think of it like this. If you're a type 2, you might have a 1-wing or a 3-wing.
Okay.
This means you'll share some characteristics with those types, making you even more unique.
So it's not like you're purely one type. It's more like a blend.
Exactly. It adds a layer of nuance and complexity to the Enneagram.
Okay.
For example, a type 2 with a 1-wing might be more organized and principled, while a 2 with a 3-wing might be more ambitious and image conscious.
Okay. That's starting to click for me.
Good.
It's like adding flavors to your core type.
Yes.
What about levels of development?
Right. Levels of development refer to the spectrum of health within each type. Every type can manifest in healthy, average, or unhealthy ways, depending on our level of self-awareness and how well we're managing our core fears and desires.
So a healthy type 8 might be a powerful advocate for justice.
Yes.
While an unhealthy type 8 might become controlling and domineering.
That's a perfect example. And a healthy type 4 might use their creativity to inspire others, while an unhealthy type 4 might get lost in their own emotional world and isolate themselves.
So it's not just about knowing your type, it's about understanding where you fall on that spectrum of health.
Exactly.
That's pretty empowering, actually.
It is. The Enneagram isn't meant to box you in. It's a tool for growth and self-awareness.
Okay.
By understanding our type and its potential pitfalls, we can start to work on those areas and become our best selves.
This is making me think about how I react to stress.
Yeah.
I definitely tend to withdraw and isolate myself when things get tough.
Perhaps you have some type 5 tendencies?
Maybe.
But the beauty is, once you're aware of those patterns, you can start to make conscious choices about how you respond.
So instead of getting swept away by my fear,
yeah,
I can use my knowledge and insight to navigate the situation more effectively.
Precisely. The Enneagram gives you a roadmap for understanding your strengths and weaknesses so you can approach challenges with more awareness and intention.
This is starting to feel less like personality types and more like a user manual for my own mind.
Yes.
It's like I'm finally understanding how my operating system works.
And that's the key, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's about self-discovery. The Enneagram provides a framework, but the real journey is inward.
Okay, so how do we actually put this knowledge into practice?
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to understand the types, but how can we use this to improve our lives and relationships?
That's the million-dollar question, and it's what we'll explore next.
So we got this amazing roadmap.
Yeah.
But how do we actually, like, use it?
Right.
Does this mean I need to, like, start psychoanalyzing everyone I meet?
It can be tempting to start typing everyone you know.
Yeah.
But remember, the Enneagram is a tool for understanding, not labeling.
Right. So it's not about, like, putting people in boxes.
Exactly.
It's about using this knowledge to connect with them on a deeper level.
Exactly. Imagine you're working on a project with a type one.
Okay.
Knowing their core motivations, you can anticipate their need for precision and order.
Right.
This might mean providing detailed plans and allowing extra time for revisions.
Okay.
But instead of getting frustrated by their perfectionism,
yeah,
you can appreciate their dedication to excellence.
That's a really good point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what about dealing with, say, a type 7 friend who always seems to be chasing the next thrill?
Understanding their fear of boredom and confinement, you can suggest activities that offer novelty and excitement.
Oh.
Maybe a weekend getaway to a new city or trying a new hobby together.
Right.
But you can also gently encourage them to find joy in the present moment and face those deeper emotions they might be trying to avoid.
So it's all about, like, meeting them where they are.
Yes.
But also helping them grow.
I
love that. This is starting to make so much sense. It's like having a decoder ring for human behavior.
It is.
Instead of getting annoyed by someone's quirks, you can understand the why behind the what.
Exactly. And that understanding can lead to more compassion, patience, and empathy in all your relationships.
So true.
It can also help you communicate more effectively.
Okay, so.
For example, if you're working with a type 5, you might need to be more direct and concise in your communication.
Okay.
Whereas a type 2 might appreciate a more personal touch.
That's a really good point. I never thought about it like that. This is such a game changer.
It is.
It's like the Enneagram gives you a secret weapon for navigating the complexities of human interaction.
And the best part is, this is just the beginning.
Ooh, tell me more.
There's so much more to explore with the Enneagram. It's a lifelong journey of self-discovery.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
I'm definitely feeling inspired to dive deeper.
Good.
But before we wrap up, any final words of wisdom for our listeners who are eager to continue this journey?
Remember, the Enneagram is a tool for growth, not judgment. It's about embracing our own uniqueness, as well as the unique beauty of every other type.
Love that.
So go out there, explore, experiment, and most importantly, have fun with it.
That's fantastic advice. Thanks for joining us on this incredible deep dive into the Enneagram. We hope you've gained some valuable insights and are excited to continue exploring this fascinating world of personality. Until next time, keep diving deep.